Welcome to the Healing Connections podcast, our co-created endeavor of exploring each other's healing journeys and various healing modalities. May you enjoy this episode.
Are we on? Yes, it's recording.
We're live.
Max and Liana here. Hello, everyone. And so this episode, I can't believe we came to the end of our first season. And we decided to do this episode on joy and many flavors of it and how it was both surprising and helpful in each of our healing journeys. So we'll share some stories and kick it off. We had very minimal planning, as always, because we really, both of us, value spontaneous emergence and just be with what's present. So there will be definitely a lot of that today. So to stay true with our style and our vision for communal healing in the moment. How's that?
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where to begin? I feel like we're already at the beginning of that season and how we know each other. Actually, like you're radiating. Whoever can see Liana right now, if you're just hearing her, I guess, as well. It's just a radiation, radiating shameless joy like the sun, at least to my perception. And that what has gotten me to get in contact with her in the first place. And yeah, flash forward, that's now we're sitting here. So in a sense, joy has been very foundational for that shared journey to even start or develop. And yeah, for me, it's a journey still very much unfolding. And happy to share my story with joy, but since Liana kicked us basically off on this, I would invite you, how tell us about your rediscovering joy, or what is joy for you?
Oh my gosh, I love this ping pong we're doing. You go first. I love this. I love this energy. I love our chemistry. I love how natural it feels. I really don't feel any different than I am and, you know, real life without microphone and headphones. So I really appreciate that. There's that, because I really value authenticity. So every time I notice it in myself, I make a mental note and do like a little celebration party. It's like, yeah, you're there. Good job. I'm so proud of you. It's such an interesting, it's almost like a reflective moment for me to do this as the last episode, because my healing journey, you could say, started with discovering, I wouldn't say joy per se yet, but connecting the positive mind states, this, you know, what I didn't think was a necessity in life. I thought it was like some kind of bonus or special occasions deserving things. Like it needed to have reason or like, significant event. Like you should feel joyful on your wedding day or something like that, the way your child is born. Like few moments in your life deserve like a joyful celebration. And needless to say, my life was not very joyful prior to that discovery when I started my actual healing journey. And it started with discovering Rick Hansen. And I read Hardwiring Happiness, where it blew my mind. He spoke the language I could relate to. It wasn't like heavily dipped in spiritual fluff, which was a huge turnoff for me at the time. I still have to kind of sort through that even these days. But it was very, very concise and scientifically based, because he's a neuroscientist. He's a neuroscientist. He studies brain. And he made a really strong argument that human brain was evolved to prioritize survival. So, you know, pleasant or positive mind states are not prioritized. So the brain doesn't learn from them. And interestingly enough, especially for our conversation here, the acronym he came up with, cultivating positive, like we have to actually, the whole point was we naturally do not notice as much as we should the positive states like joy. It just kind of goes by because our brain is kind of zeroed in on the negative and learn from it really quick. Like it's uses as a possible learning to avoid possible danger in the future. And sometimes we get stuck in it. So his route out of it was we can spend more time and energy in nurturing your ability, increase your tolerance for joy, increase your tolerance for good. And the acronym for that is HEAL. Because you have the experience, you expand it, and then you absorb it, and then you link it to the larger experience. So my experience was not only joyful, but it was intensely spiritual, which completely shocked me because I was, and it was in completely ordinary situation. I took my son to a playground. He was playing on the swings and I was just watching him. I was standing on a little walkway in the park. There was nobody there and it was a pleasant day. It was sunny and I'm like a walking plant. Sun is a big deal for me, but I never took my time appreciating it. So I was standing there. I'm like, hey, I'm going to Rick Hansen this moment right now. I'm going to apply this. Can I have this? Is it pleasant? Yes. Okay. Can I? And he's this, the thing that sold me. You only need to have presence, like engaged presence for 20 seconds in order for this positive experience to actually be deposited in your bank of positive experience, of to actually contribute to the increased tolerance for goodness. And for your ability to see it, like it works like on multi levels, which I can attest to. That's my experience with that process. So my very first experience was there is the sun that was hitting my skin. There was a wind and I literally just stood there. I'm like, I'm going to absorb. So I have an experience and I'm expanding it. I'm engaging all my senses. I'm noticing the smells, how it feels on my skin, the temperature, the everything, the how I feel. I started tearing up. It got intensely emotional, completely unexpected. And I was just this engulfed with joy of the moment. And I had the experience, I expanded it, and then I absorbed it. I allowed like a sponge to soak it into my body. Like the sun, this melting sensation, this exuberant joy for no reason, apparent reason. And I'm like, and then I had this insight, which is the link part, was like, oh my gosh, I don't have to wait for a significant moment in order to experience this. It's like here all the time. If I'm looking for it, I just didn't know to look for it and what to do when I find it. So I was so empowered. I was so taken by this experience that I pursued meditation. Meditation was not accessible to me prior to that. That was my foot in. And so that whole thing ended up being life changing because then it motivated me to pursue professional. I'm a meditation teacher. I'm a certified meditation teacher. So I went to this 2-year intensive teacher training process, learned so much more about meditation, understand it, like went deep. So how interesting it is that we now, at the last episode, talking about the joy and connection to healing, when it was literally my door in, and his acronym was HEAL. Hmm. You can't make the shit up.
You can't make that shit up. No, it's beautiful. Yeah. Let me contrast that with, like, for me, it was different. Joy came and still is coming much later along my journey. And I learned at some point of my meditative journey how important pleasantness and pleasant sensations are. Also for healing. Like if I feel safe and if there's pleasant stuff, there's much more capacity to handle the unpleasant stuff and to go through it. But for me, it was not joy. For me, what always came very naturally is like loving kindness, wishing other people well, was for me much more accessible. And it's very similar from that. Like joy has so many joy, love, loving kindness. It's all from the same bucket, but it's slightly mm-hmm. different flavors. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I've noticed like loving kindness was very accessible for me. Joy was accessible in special occasions. So when I had like a deep meditation, I felt like, okay, this is joyful. Like I can, that it's like a wedding day. Mm. It had that magnitude, and the magnitude, if particularly on the meditation retreat, for example, things get more intense. I gave myself the implicit permission. Okay, now it's okay to be joyful. Now it's okay. And then there was joy. But that in the everyday life, maybe also due to a traumatic wiring in my brain, if you have PTSD or complex PTSD or traumatic childhood history, your amygdala is increased, right? You're even more than the average human wired to look for danger, and your amygdala is larger. So I like my Velcro for negative stuff and looking for the negative was and still is very strong. Mm-hmm. And what really started, I think I knew that for a couple of years. And then the joy thing. It's not that I knew that I have barriers in front of joy. It just felt like it's not that important. You know, I have other stuff to feel good. At some point, it was like, I maybe don't deserve to feel happy, to feel joyful. Mm-hmm. That's not for me. It was very easy, like sympathetic joy, seeing somebody else happy. Mm-hmm. That was okay. I could be very happy seeing somebody happy. So that was okay for me. There was internal permission for that. Being happy and joyful for my own life circumstances, nah, rather not. Mm. And what just this week happened, and that's also part why we came up that this episode here, we started doing, and I think for you it's also in the social meditation, the shameless joy, right? Yeah. That really started doing just a half hour, just joy in a group setting. And that for me was that group therapy, just having other people do it. And we've mentioned the word co-regulation. It starts feeling right now, and I'm middle in the of the process, that it just gives me permission to feel joy all out, like with no hesitation. And I'm really excited about this right now and looking forward to cultivate it more. I've read Rick Hansen, Hardwiring Happiness, a few years ago. Well, intellectually, it completely makes sense. Oh, that makes so much sense. But I have more important stuff to do. You know, that's there is still all of the trauma. I going into trauma, and I dig down there, and yeah, focusing on the unpleasant and the negative, and yeah. But it always that comes our way when we are ready, I guess. So I'm happy that it is there right now. And yeah, so that was my connection with joy right now. It's very alive for me.
There's so much that came up as you were sharing. It reminded me, because I also come from a world of trauma, and one of the really significant avenue or the my healing journey took place, it's still taking place. It's I feel like a lifelong process in the 12-step program, which is a group recovery. And one of the thing is one of the promises that we learn to reparent ourselves with love, humor, joy, respect. And I remember it's like, humor and joy. Really? Like, we're dealing with some heavy shit here. Like, how's that? Does that belong? And I understand it now, where I'm at, when I, Brené Brown, who is a researcher, she works in some university in Texas as a, I think is a professor even, but she's a well-known writer and speaker. But she said that you can't selectively numb a feeling. Like if you don't have the capacity to feel into your pain, into your sorrows, into like the feelings we typically run away from, you also limit or numb out your capacity to feel joy, to capacity to feel love, and this quality of unconditional joy is, to me, it's like a flavor or a variation of love. They're very, very similar the way I experience them. But that thing that you mentioned, the shameless joy, that really hit me. Like it really touched something that was really, really, I wouldn't say broken, injured. There was a really injured part that was very young where I couldn't express my feelings without some shame, including joy. Joy was like so entangled in my system with feeling shame. And again, and I come from culture, I'm a carrier of Russian language, and we have a saying, when you smile without reason, it's a sign of like not being well, like you're not all there. Like, улыбка без причины признак дурачины. But that's something, if you want to look it up, it's a real thing. I'm not making the shit up. So coming from that conditioning into where I am now, where I was having social meditation, and it wasn't even specifically designed for joyful states. It was freestyle. You can note anything. It was like progressive release. So we were just doing in the group, saying out loud what was present for us, taking, I think it was spontaneous. So whatever it was arising. And I was feeling joy. And for whatever reason, I think either somebody mentioned it or it just arose from the space. So I paired for the first time shameless and the joy. And because that's what I was feeling, and now it had a name. Bam. It's like I kicked open the door into this completely unexplored, glorious journey. It just, so once you know what it is, you can't unseen it. It's like, and then this coupling, it's exactly what Rick Hansen was talking about, except I couldn't quite, you know, it's like I was doing it the way he explained it, but it was very kind of like fake it till you make it type thing. But this was embodied linking of undoing the previous burden where joy was burdened by shame. And then now, bam, shameless joy. Whoop, whoop.
Whoop, whoop. Sounds amazing. I just felt like a story came up. It's from Buddhism, but it just comes to illustrate a point for healing to me. The story is that the Buddha said it, that if you have a glass of water and you put a tablespoon of salt in it, and imagine the salt is whatever heavy shit or whatever stuff you have to process, and then try to drink that water, it will be very terrible to drink, and probably healing will be very challenging. But if you put it in a flowing river, then the salt doesn't even barely change it. So if you have a reservoir of pleasantness, of joy, if you have that accessible, like you just said, or even any other form of way to make yourself feel good, then you can absorb the shocks. You can hold it because it's compared to that reservoir. It's not that all-encompassing. It's still heavy shit. So no doubt about it. Don't want to marginalize anything that people are experiencing. But you have so much more space to hold it and to accept those things, because those things first have to be fully accepted before they are ready to move on and release. So as long as we, the salty spoon in the glass, I want that salt to go away, right? Yeah. I don't want to drink salty water. And even if it's a subtle wish, like even when I say, okay, I will accept that I'm drinking salty water, and there is a subtle thing. I don't want this. I want it to stop. I want it to go away. And as long as this resistance is there, it cannot release. But if it's a swimming pool full of water, I don't care if there's a spoon of salt in it. And I accept that this is part of the swimming pool and it's okay. And then the salt dissolves in the water and you don't even notice it anymore.
Beautiful. There's another really important aspect of joy that we keep touching into is the communal quality. Like it's bridge building ability. I feel like it's one of those qualities that we can use. We have a mirror neurons. So we are wired to connect. And I feel joy is quite accessible, even if you are in the midst of dysregulation. There is something about it that you want. You want a piece of that. Like there's something like in your body awakens. It's like, this is wholesome. This is something. How do I get? I'll have what they have it. Because that feels like looks amazing.
Except like I used to have certain beliefs around joy, like thinking like, or maybe Russian people will think like those people that are so happy, bouncy around, they are weird. They are weak. They are stupid. They just don't know. That's why they're laughing. If they would know what I know, so you lower the value of joy because it's not accessible to you at the moment. And so I think it's very, if someone feels joy is difficult to access, I would invite them to write down, to find out what are my beliefs around joy. What is my set of beliefs? Is joy only for special occasions? Is joy a weakness? Is joy a luxury that I cannot afford? And see what stands between me and the experience of joy. And is that belief necessarily true? Or what can play around? What if the opposite belief would be true? How would that feel?
That sounds like work.
I think at some point we should have a session on beliefs, because there's also there's
holy
a lot in
moly.
It. Then, yeah.
Or maybe we can give a taste of experiential. I didn't arrive. I mean, this you shared an amazing insight. It sounds like, especially for somebody who is inclined to do like inquiries, or do well with investigative writing or stream of consciousness, this would be a really good exercise and prompt. We also are very fortunate of both of us belonging to this community where we practice social interaction, where we practice meditating with other people out loud. And often the joy arises just in that environment. And then, but there is also specific practices that are kind of like designed to maybe cultivate or attune to specific quality like joy. Like I think we did in the previous episode, we did the example of Zen noting, which was as something you like embody or attune to this particular quality. I think we did compassion. I think in this case, we can do joy and we can like, do you feel like, oh, up for kind of give a taste? And if the listeners, if you feel inclined, you're welcome to join us, or you can just listen, because there's a way you can engage in this. You still receive the energy from it. It's called witnessing, where you do the practice. You can do it out loud or to yourself, or just be present. And so what we'll do is we'll take turns and then we'll note how we experience joy in the moment. So the form will be as joy and then whatever comes up.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, go for it. I'll do my bell. My bell is attuned to heart frequency. So joy to me is completely a heartful state. So I'm gonna delight the listeners with this beautiful bell. And then let's do a few minutes, two, 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. As joy.
As joy. There's deep listening.
As joy, there is connection.
As joy, there's gratitude.
As joy, there is tenderness.
As joy, I allow myself to take in the positive.
As joy, I feel like I'm melting.
As joy, there's deep relaxation.
As joy, there is gratitude.
As joy, my heart is bouncing.
As joy, there is a full body smile.
As joy, I've missed the feeling of hurting cheeks from too much laughter.
As joy, there is synchronicity and resonance.
As joy, there is connection.
As joy, there is beauty in the ordinary.
As joy, there is the ability to laugh about myself.
As joy, there is liberation.
As joy, there are resources to support me.
As joy, there is love.
As joy, there is happiness to see you. I feel like sharing that it's crazy. Like before I started doing those social meditations, It in a sense, it feels like magic that you can just orient yourself towards some state, some emotion, and then it happens, you know. And I think there's also science done on it, right? You can either you laugh because you're happy, or you laugh so long until you are happy. And I just find it amazing that you can cultivate wholesome states, and without taking, there's no pill, there's no substance involved to change your state of consciousness. You just call it up. I think that's just amazing.
Yeah, and that's where science come and help us. That's what was so, to me, inspiring and something I could really grasp and understand. Because I didn't start doing my healing journey or the meditation for some, you know, enlightenment I didn't understand. To me, it was such a like a practical or applied almost a tool to change myself into this original form, like release the conditioning that were burdening me and to uncover, to recover the original purity or original, I don't know if purity is the right word, but my core, the, you know, like the, what is timeless. And, so to me, the discovering that there is such thing as neuroplasticity, that my brain has the capacity to change, not only when I'm young and, you know, and moldable, but throughout my life, as long as I am alive, I can change. And I participate. And that's why presence is so important, is when I'm present, I'm actively participating in the direction of this change. Where do I want to go? And that's, to me, that's an essence. That's the core of the healing journey, is not to control my circumstances or my environment, but to have discernment, have the knowing that I am the one who can choose, the only person I can mm-hmm. control or change is me. And then I get to decide which direction I want to go, which energy I want to have more of. So.
Oh, beautifully put. Yeah. And thinking of that, we are at the end of that season. It just, like, that healing is not happening overnight, that it's a gradual mm-hmm. process that requires patience, because our brain literally has to rewire and change its structure. And at the same time, that if you would have told me 5 years ago, no end in sight, that this will kind of be a permanent companion for a long part of my life, it might have discouraged me. And the nice thing, and I think you've mentioned it before, is that every step is worth it. And no matter, nobody knows how much healing there is to be done up front, I would say. You cannot really know. And in particular, when you allow the pleasant states to rise and be there and invite those as a companion on that journey, it does not have to be a drag. You know, it can be a joyful journey with heavy shit coming up and with a lot of tears, with a lot of tears being cried and maybe a breakdown to be had here and there, but overall it can be a really rewarding and beautiful journey.
There is also alchemy to this. There, when you have a supportive community, I mean, there's some healing that needs to be done individually, and you know, you just gotta sit with your dark side. and there is, in my experience, there are places where I felt safe, places where I felt supported, I felt seen, I feel appreciated, is because there's so much of our hurts, especially when it comes to attachment trauma, happens in relationship with other people. So we got to heal in relationships as well. Mm-hmm. And the alchemy I'm speaking about, I know it's a right place for me when I share my joy, it doubles. And when I share my sorrows, they lessen.
Mm.
So when not doubles, grows. So and that's, I've been fortunate to find places, because I know I've experienced it, so I know now they exist. So now I kind of discern my where I spend my time is like, does this have this kind of alchemy in it? Then I'm in. This is very supportive.
Yeah. Mm. The Thanks for pointing out the community aspect. And I feel like just because we have been talking a lot about social meditation and the community where we met, it's not the secretive thing.
So all it's exclusive.
Called, let's just do the full disclaimer. This is, it's called Buddhist Geeks. There's a podcast from Vince Horn and his wife, Emily Horn, who have built it up. It's free for public access. You can check out the homepage, see if it resonates. So there's the word Buddhist in it. There are many people in there who, like yourself, don't identify at all as Buddhists and just think they are useful practices. So if this resonated, just so it's open for people to explore. And but everybody is on their unique own journey, and I'm sure all of you listeners will find the right places and spots and techniques along your very unique journey.
I wish you find your team, your support team, whether it's in yourself or in your surrounding or both. I wish you happy healing journey, and we'll see you next season if that comes into into fruition. To be stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Be well. Be safe. Be joyful.
Happy healing.
Happy healing. Bye bye.
Thank you for listening to our Healing Connections podcast. Max and I started this project to normalize healing and to spread the word that we are not alone on this journey. If any of what you heard was enjoyable or helpful to you, you can support our growth by recommending this podcast to someone you know, rating it, and or leaving a review on whatever platform you are listening to it. In any case, we sincerely wish you well. May you thrive in whichever way is meaningful to you.